Blog Talk Radio.
An African global cooperative, the only solution to prevent global climate collapse. Tonight's conversation will be right back. Our roots began in Africa, where we enjoyed self-determination, freedom, and all of that was rooted in our peace family. Welcome to Us Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly radio program that airs every Thursday evening from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Dare to Win is the place where we have sobering conversations about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this global machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join tonight's conversation, please call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone when you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you prefer to listen on your computer, go to www.us.com, scroll down to the bottom of the homepage, click on the Dare to Win button, then click on Listen Live. You will then be on the Blog Talk Radio site. If you want to get reminders from Blog Talk Radio for upcoming Dare to Win programs, please click on the Follow button. I'm Sister Q, and joining me for this evening's discussion is Brother Auntie, who, like me, is a member of Hulu. Peace, Brother Auntie. How are you doing tonight?
Peace to you, Sister Q. I am well and good to hear your voice and excited and looking forward to our conversation with the family tonight.
We're looking forward to getting into the subject matter and exploring what you had in mind. So let's begin, Brother Anki. What do you mean by a global African cooperative?
And thank you, Sister Q. Cooperatives are not new organizations or institutions. They're voluntary association of people who come together to address economic issues. There are many types of cooperatives. There are worker-owner cooperatives. There are consumer cooperatives. There are producer cooperatives. Us Lifting Us is a hybrid between community-owned cooperatives and worker who operate in the Ulu businesses or co-owners in the cooperative. So what we are talking about is a large, primary, group-owned, family-centered, African values-based economic cooperative. Also, this primary cooperative is the mother cooperative to potentially hundreds of secondary cooperatives providing essential goods and services in a variety of areas such as energy, food, clothes, shelter, any need that our community has can be met through a cooperative business organization. And that is what we have been building in Ulu for the last 6-8 years of our existence. And what's important to understand is that many times we are familiar with cooperatives. I know for our listeners here who are in the Atlanta area, we're familiar perhaps with the 7-9, the food co-op, which serves a community in the Little Five Points area. It's a medium-sized grocery store, and it provides food for the people, for the members of the cooperative, everything with the exception of meat. And so if we're not careful, we have rather a limited view of what this cooperative is. I'm hoping that we will have an expanded version of these economic businesses that are now available to us to start and own and operate. Early on in the genesis of Us Lifting Us, in doing our research, we ran across an organization called Mondragon Cooperatives that operate in the northern part of Spain in a region called Basque, B-A-S-Q-U-E. And what we discovered was that in the span of 25 years, they built a cooperative from scratch to where just recently it's doing like $16 billion a year in annual sales. It employs 74,000 workers and growing. It is the fourth largest business conglomerate in all of Spain. So we have to think huge and large scale as we talk about Us Lifting Us and the cooperative that we're building. Now, we're excited because we have members on the continent of Africa. We have members throughout the diaspora in England, in the Bahamas, in the Caribbean, and certainly here in the United States, and many members, if I didn't say it, on the continent. So we are already global in terms of where members reside. Our challenge now is to scale up to where we are doing first millions of dollars and then billions of dollars. Because Sister Q, if you think about it, for every million members that come into Us Lifting Us, and if they're purchasing a $1,000 co-op unit, that's $1 billion. So, so we have this vast wealth flowing through our fingers, and our the opportunity that is before us is how do we harness this flow of economic power into an institution that we own and control. The good news is we've built the institution. The work that is before us now is to take it to a larger scale so that the Mondragon facility is able to employ hundreds and thousands of our people, and we can begin to see millions and billions of dollars flowing back into our community that we can then use for growth and development. So that's what we mean when we say a global African cooperative. And when we say African, obviously we mean Africans on the continent and Africans throughout the diaspora. We are not limiting our imaginations to what we can build. For those of our members who have had the privilege and the opportunity to travel to Egypt, for example, and stand and gaze at the pyramids, and keep in mind that this was standing in 2500 BCE. So our people have been operating on a grand scale for thousands of years, for millennia. Mm-hmm. And we don't have to limit what we think we can do to medium and small scale business operations. Let me pause there. You might have a comment or a question, Mr. Q.
The comment that I had was that you mentioned 25 years that it took Mondragon to go from inception to where their multi-billion-dollar project. And I think we tend to want instant whatever. So if we, you know, join up this year and we're not making the $1 billion this year, we've failed. And I think that's a way of thinking that it would do us good to change, you know, our concept.
I'm glad you made that comment. You're right. I'm glad you made that comment. A, because Mondragon failed before it succeeded. They originally came together and organized the co-op, and then outside investors joined the co-op, and they turned it into a private corporation. And so learning from that lesson, they rebuilt another cooperative, and they made sure that that people coming in to join it would not subvert the mission of the co-op to become something else. Mm-hmm. The other point that you touched upon that is crucial, it is absolutely essential that we in our community, and certainly we in Ulu, keep uppermost and foremost in mind, is that cooperatives, that in terms of how we are discussing them tonight, our goal is to create a vehicle and a mechanism that is able to create jobs. We're not building this cooperative from the standpoint of generating profit only. Now, some people will trip when I say that, but our goal in bringing this cooperative to life, for birthing it into our communities, is that we are building an economy, not just a business or a business or a particular business model. We are building economy, an actual mechanism that allows us to provide for our own food, clothing, shelter, energy, in other words, everything necessary for life, and for us to create the markets in which these transactions can occur. It's very different when you go into a business venture with your goal to create meaningful employment as your primary goal, as opposed to setting up a business whose primary goal is maximum profit. If people are coming into ULU thinking that this is about maximizing profit, they're going to be frustrated and probably disappointed. Cooperatives certainly are able to generate millions and billions of dollars and to create surplus value. There's no question about that. But there's a difference in terms of the problems that we see, for example, in this country, is the income inequality, where you have 1% who are generating more wealth than half of the people on the planet. And it's that income inequality that's driving the social fabric to destruction and to rendering. In other words, healthy communities are where everybody has what they need and is able to live comfortably without worrying about how they're going to put food on the table, how they're going to educate their children, how they're going to take care of their health care. And so if we organize our economy to produce jobs or to produce opportunities to serve one another that are also adequately compensated, we'll have a much healthier society. So that is an important dimension to this global African cooperative that we have to be wide-eyed and very clear going into. We have a very different goal in mind as we develop these economic institutions. We're trying to give people the opportunity to be employed and to be gainfully employed. In many instances, not only do the workers in these cooperatives draw a weekly or biweekly salary, they also are eligible for quarterly profit sharing from the organization. In the case of Mondragon, for example, rather than take the quarterly bonus payout, those payments went into the workers' pension fund, and they drew it upon retirement at 65. And so when they retire at 65, they're sitting on hundreds of thousands of dollars that will help them to live very comfortably throughout their retirement years without this necessarily having to come from the government. So A, during their working life, they enjoy a comfortable and livable salary comparable to $20 or $25 an hour. And then upon retirement, they have a pension fund that enables them to still live a high middle-class life for the rest of their years. It takes the stress out of their society, and they're able to focus on, you know, what is the real meaning of life, as opposed to in this country where it's a rat race. No matter how much you make, it's never enough. And, you know, you work 30, 40, 50 years of your life, and then you haven't saved enough for retirement, and you know, you're scrabbling and huffing and puffing, trying to make sure that you can maintain some kind of quality of life in your retirement years. But there's a tremendous amount of anxiety and worry because that's just the way this society is organized. It's not designed for people to be healthy and at peace with themselves throughout their working lives and throughout their entire lives. So if we are going to be healthy both physically and emotionally and psychologically, this business of organizing a new economy for ourselves goes far beyond just being concerned about the business making profit. Yes, it will be profitable, but maximizing profit and maximum profit at all costs will never be the end game for the cooperatives that we envision for ourselves and for our children.
What you were saying, Brother Onti, about retirement in Montagon, it sounds like as when they're working there, they are co-op members, and they're entitled to profit sharing, which they don't get. When they retire, they have all the profit sharing they didn't take, plus they're still members, right? So it sounds like
correct.
They're entitled still to future
yes.
future
yes.
profits. So, yeah, that sounds a way to be comfortable and not have to worry about things. And also, too, the president of the cooperative would not be making a salary that's 100 or 200 times the salary of, you know, the general
right.
workers.
Well, actually, and the way these packages are, the way these salaries are packaged in today's economy, the CEO may be making 3,000 times what the average hourly wage worker is making. And so
okay.
you're absolutely right. Mondragon structured itself so that no executive would make more than six times the salary of the incoming or the beginning hourly worker. So that,
right.
that's how they protect themselves against this runaway income inequality. But I want to stress that we are building a global mechanism. This is not just something for a region in the United States or a city or a state. This is global in its scope. And we can do that because the way we have organized it, the bylaws, the operating agreement, is such that anyone that has become a member of Us Lifting Us can participate fully in the organizational structure. And so we're excited. Forecasts say that by 2050, the population of the African continent will be the largest population on the planet. We will have surpassed China and India. And not only that, but the median age of that population will be under 35. And so
okay.
the future is extremely bright for us. And what we're talking about really is building a new civilization, one that is dynamic, that meets our needs, but is also so well grounded and so prophetic in its operation that it benefits the entire planet. It's not like this way of doing business is driven by African values, and so
mm-hmm.
there's this overarching concern for the health of the planet, for the health of women and the children, for the well-being of the elderly, for the adequate education of the children. All of these are significant goals in this, what we would call an Ujamaa economy, Us Lifting Us economic cooperative. These are the ways that we envision organizing our lives both locally and globally. And it's just based on African values. I mean, this is not new for us. This is just reclaiming it and updating it for the 21st and 22nd century. So
okay.
So that's what we mean when we say a global African cooperative. There's the primary cooperative, which is ULU, and then from there we spin off secondary cooperatives that would operate in any given sphere. So there might be a food cooperative that would be a secondary cooperative. There might be a solar company that would be in the energy sector that would be a secondary co-op. There might be a construction company that would be a secondary co-op. So there's the primary co-op that becomes the umbrella for all of these secondary cooperatives, and the secondary cooperatives can number well into the hundreds. Whatever the need is, that need would be met through a cooperative business structure, and that's critical because if people think about the neighborhoods in which they live, I know I'm thinking about my neighborhood. There are two grocery stores. There's a Kroger and a Publix. There's a beauty supply. There's a laundromat, not a laundromat. There's a dry cleaners. There are food places, movie houses, bookstores. But all of the businesses are privately owned. And so while we shop in them and they extract the wealth out of our community, they don't give back to our community. And exactly. We have come to participate in that arrangement as we accept it as normal. And that's exactly. Part of what we are trying to correct as we build ULU and scale it up. That is not the way business should interact with the community. The business should sit in the community, be part of the community, and give back to the community. And if it's not doing that, that's a problem. So right. When we envision communities, while there may still be a Kroger and a Publix and all these other things going on, there will be an ULU business able to provide groceries. There will be an ULU business able to provide clothing. There will be an ULU business able to provide beauty care products. There will be an ULU business, whatever things that are there that we currently are getting from other sources, we would be able to get from our own ULU secondary cooperative that we own and we control and we call the shots in. That's the vision that okay. We are sharing and hoping that our people will see the logic in it and say, yes, this makes sense in terms of how I invest my money.
Right. Brother Umphrey, we have a caller with the hand raised, so I'm going to take this call. Caller with the left for 3440, please state your name, where you're calling from, make your comment or ask your question. Thank you.
Yeah. Greetings. Can you hear me, Sister Q, Brother Auntie? This is Brother Shabaka yes. Calling from South Florida.
Loud and clear, Brother Shabaka. How you doing?
Okay. Thank you. I'm doing fine, and I like the subject. Let me throw a wrinkle in your assessment, particularly with the growth of Africa. There are some, and I'm saying this is not general, but there are some who believe that the COVID pandemic or plandemic, as some people view, is designed to reduce the population, particularly of those countries in the South that have the largest growth rate. All right. And that part of their planning of expansion is to reduce that under the guise of a pandemic so that it could introduce the vaccine, so-called. All right, as a mechanism, all right, to stunt the growth of the on the African continent, if not also among Africans throughout the diaspora. In addition to that, you know, with climate change, and of course, what's becoming a little bit more prevalent now about, you know, microplastics and almost everything that we almost eat, it's expensive. In the sea, on the land, and stuff like that. How do you foresee an organization that must address that? And when I say that, I'm talking about ULU. How you see ULU ability to address that as we move forward, understanding of the treacherous impact that the Europeans are apparently up among themselves, as well as what they have created through the manipulation of the weather patterns and of course, you know, the pollutants with the microplastic that's becoming more and more pronounced in the news. And so I'll just listen to your comments. But thank you. Good program.
Thank you, Brother Tabaka.
Thank you, Brother Tabaka. It's an excellent question. Very good question. And it actually leads into the second aspect of what we wanted to get into, the significance of the cooperatives that we are talking about and why they are so significant now. As you mentioned, the COVID pandemic, well, first of all, we know that there has been a movement since the early 19th century called eugenics to interfere, disrupt the reproductive cycles and capacity of African people. This is an ongoing assault on us psychologically, chemically, biologically, always trying to reduce our population. So that's not new. What's new is the different shapes and forms that it takes. And then I think your comment about the microplastics and all of this excessive pollution that we're facing, if anything makes clear the need for us to build our own cooperative vehicle, you've hit the nail on the head. What I mean by that is this. Private corporations, which is, and at this point, are driven by the fossil fuel industry. So since oil was discovered in Texas back during the 19th century, oil has been used in every aspect of quote-unquote modern Western civilization. So oil is used for fuel. Oil is used for fertilizer, and is part of is the heart of the agricultural system. Oil is oil derivatives find their way into the chemicals and into prescription medicines. Oil is used to in our cars and airplanes to fuel transportation. The entire Western edifice hinges upon fossil fuel. And just as important, if not more importantly, when Exxon and Chevron and these major corporations, their projections about the valuation of their stocks, those projections are based upon the oil that they are currently tapping and the oil reserves that are still in the ground. So along comes global warming, where Mother Nature says, okay, it's time for us to wean ourselves from fossil fuels because you're clogging up the planet's ability to breathe. There's so much carbon emission in the air, it's trapping heat in the atmosphere, and it's causing the temperatures to rise, which is throwing off the water cycle, and it's driving these severe weather events, whether it's flooding, whether it's drought that leads to wildfires, whether it's these tornadoes and hurricanes that are now, you know, Category 5. All of this severe weather is the reaction to the warming of the planet, because the carbon emissions are preventing the heat from escaping the planet. And not only that, because these, because of Western civilization's encroachment more and more into previous habitats that humans were not in, that also is creating the likelihood of more and more contact between humans and animal species that we didn't have before, hence more and more virals, more viruses. So COVID is not the first, and for sure it will not be the last. But all of this is because of this fossil fuel-driven economic model that is the linchpin of capitalism. And so the choice, Brother Shabaka, I think, facing the human family right now, because this is a global event. The human family is facing extinction if we don't reduce by 50% carbon emissions by 2030, which is just 8 years away, and if we don't get it down to zero by 2050, which is another, 20 years after that. So 28 years to drop fossil fuel usage to zero. Now, the scientific capacity is there, both in terms of solar, wind, thermal. We could get off of carbon very rapidly in terms of just the science being in place and the capacity to do that. The problem is the fossil fuel industry and the 1% who control the fossil fuel industry realize that if we were to decarbonize and get off of carbon that quickly, their entire portfolios would crash and all of their wealth would evaporate. And so what we are living in and living through is this last-ditch desperate attempt by the fossil fuel industry and their supporters to maintain hegemony over the planet, even though they recognize that millions and millions of people are going to die. Not only will millions of people die, even more people will be rendered refugee and be forced to relocate to other parts of the planet to live on. And so this really is an existential threat facing the entire human family. And it's interesting to note that because of the power of the fossil fuel industry, who control the media, so and Brother Shabaka, you've been relentlessly sharing with us week after week after week the insidious nature of COVID and the sham that it is, but it's hard to get that message through because these folks control all the newspapers, all the television, all the radio, the social media platforms, and their message is everywhere. Get the vaccine, get the vaccine, get the vaccine, get the vaccine, whatever. Just constantly driving people almost to distraction. We saw where the Build Back Better bill that Biden was pushing got killed in the Senate by two people, Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema. Joe Manchin, who is the CEO of a coal production company. So he has direct ties to fossil fuel. He's not about to allow legislation through that's going to reduce the role of coal and oil and gas and nuclear as the way of providing energy in the country right now. So the question facing the human family is, will we continue to let the 1% drive us to the point of extinction, or will we rise up and take control of these resources and pull back from the brink of climate collapse and give ourselves and our children a chance to live productive and healthy lives? And the jury is out, in my opinion, Shabaka. But the good news about the co-op, and this is true not only for Ulu and Us Lifting Us, this is true of all co-ops. These are voluntary associations of people who come together and pool their resources to do what they want to do. So the good news is we build ULU and we don't have to put it before the Congress to give them, for them to vote and say, yes, you can have that. We pool our dollars, every time 1,000 members come together and bring $1,000, that's $1 million. We pool our resources. We build the economic institutions that we need, and we bypass the foolishness. What they are doing, I think, will eventually collapse, but they are certainly using up very precious time that we don't have a lot to play with. We've already lost 2 years with COVID, so instead of talking about global warming, instead of talking about renewable energy, instead of talking about a national conservation core that will retrofit buildings and make them more efficient, more energy efficient, instead of talking about putting solar panels on rooftops and moving bus fleets to electric buses, instead of all of the things that we could be doing to really reduce the carbon footprint, all of that is sitting on the back burner while we talk about COVID, while we talk about the January 6th insurrection, while we talk about the rise of fascism, while we talk about all of the, and now we're talking about Ukraine. So all of these things that are taking our attention away from the very simple truth of the matter is that if we build a cooperative economy, we can bypass the foolishness of the fossil fuel industry. Now, make no mistake, they're not going to just roll over and take that. But if we start talking about building these cooperatives, it puts us on the offensive. It means that they have to react to us rather than us reacting to them. I'll pause there because that was quite a lengthy response, but I hope, Brother Shabaka, I spoke in some ways to the point that you're raising.
He said he would listen, so his mic is not open right now. But I think that you did an excellent job reminding us of issues that that we've been diverted to. And I want to say that, we know that depopulation is the overall goal. So if we are not going to get caught up in that meat grinder, we have to take control in, of our
own.
So, Brother Auntie, I'm going to play your ad now. And when we come back, I want you to tell us what we can expect at this year's ULU meeting.
Okay. Greetings.
Greetings, Brother Auntie. Habaragani, what's the news?
Kuji Chagalia, how are you doing today?
I'm well. How about you?
I'm so glad you called. Let me tell you about a very important event happening for ULU members. Did you know that the annual ULU members meeting and convention is coming up soon?
No, I hadn't heard. Tell me more.
Well, as you know, Us Lifting Us is the premier global economic cooperative community for people of African descent.
Mm-hmm.
Collectively, we're building successful business models that give us capacity to gain significant control of the economics of our community.
Yes, I know. And I agree wholeheartedly about this approach to nation building. Tell me more about the annual members meeting and convention.
This year's meeting will be virtual again due to COVID-19, but we're planning a live online event for members to interact with each other, get to know each other, and get to know more about the ULU plan and some important recent initiatives like real estate and cryptocurrency.
Sounds exciting. I want to be there. What do I need to do?
Simply go to usliftingus.com, and that is USLIFTINGUS.com, and register there. And if you're interested in becoming a sponsor for the convention, you can sign up there as well.
That sounds easy enough to do. I'm on it right now.
And all ULU members can do that right now. Show your support for ULU. Register now at
usliftingus.com.
That's usliftingus.com.
Welcome back to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night weekly radio program, where we discuss taking control of the economic destiny of our people globally and how we're going to do that. Tonight, Brother Anki is discussing an African global cooperative, the only solution to prevent global climate collapse. Say that five times fast. Anyway, what can we expect to have happen at this year's annual ULU meeting?
Thank you, Sister Q. Well, first of all, family, mark your calendars. March 11th, 12th, and 13th are the dates. That's March 11th. That's a Friday, Saturday the 12th, and the 13th, that's a Sunday. That's the second weekend in March of 2022. As you know, this is virtual. Registration is $35, and all you have to do is go to our website, usliftingus.com. Click on the, you'll see the annual meeting banner. Click on the banner, and it will allow you to register to attend. Now, Here's we have as was mentioned in the commercial, we'll be talking about exciting real estate development plans that will be launching, and we want the ULU family to be aware of that. We'll be talking with our family in Ghana and getting updates on how we are coming with the recycling project in Ghana. We'll be exploring cryptocurrency and its usefulness for global use as a currency for our people. We have an exciting keynote speaker. We cannot announce the name just yet. We'll have that out in a few days. So it's going to be, and all of this is interactive, and so it's going to be a power-packed three-day meeting. And we want all of our ULU members in attendance. So, again, March 11th, 12th, and 13th, 2022, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. If you have not registered, please, please, please do that tonight. Now, let me just share this story right now. Some of you may be familiar with this. And some of you may be hearing this for the first time, but the story is told that there was an African farmer who heard of some of his friends who discovered diamonds and became fabulously wealthy, and he decided that he wanted to do the same thing. So he sold his farm and packed his things and went on a search over the African continent to find diamonds and to strike it rich. He searched high and low, east and west, north and south, and to no avail. He exhausted his funds and finally, completely demoralized, he hurled himself into the ocean and died. Tragic story. Meanwhile, the person he sold his farm to was walking along the farmland with his little girl, and she saw this black rock on the ground, and she kicked it, and it struck another rock as it landed, and it gave off this brilliant light, just dazzling. And he looked, he said, wow, they picked up the stone. It was almost the size of his fist. And he said, this had to be valuable. So they took it into town and had a diamond person look at it. And lo and behold, the assayer told the farmer, says, this stone is of inestimable value. Where on earth did you find it? And so they went back to his farm, and he says it was right there. And they moved around, and he looked, and he saw another rock, black and ugly, and then another, and another, and another. And he discovered that literally on this farm was acres and acres of diamond. The only reason that the original farmer didn't know that was because diamonds don't look like diamonds in the rough. They're black. They look like black rocks, black lumps of coal. But once they are chiseled and polished, their worth can't be estimated. Long story short, sometimes we look at us lifting us as this cooperative, and all we see is this black lump, this dark piece of coal, not realizing that this is an instrument of inestimable value. And I say that to say that, for example, when we're in the business meeting at Ulu, and this year we'll be talking about some things that we have to consider about restructuring Ulu to make it more secure for ourselves and to prevent us from being sued, we need the input from the membership to guide this conversation and help us make the best decision. Now, that may not seem important, but the beauty of cooperatives is they provide a forum for the community to talk about things that are of great importance and significance to the future and how we go forward. And so at each annual meeting, we are discussing how do we make full use of our economic resources. In other words, this is Kujichagulia at its highest. We often sometimes don't participate in our own organizations and functions because they may not seem as glitzy as the annual shareholders meeting, say for General Motors or some other corporation. This Ulu meeting is the genesis of African folks building a global economic cooperative that is going to change the future of ourselves and change the future of the planet. So their participation is critical. This is genuine democracy at work. And the reason that life in America is so frustrating for us right now is that America is not democratic. If the economics is not democratic, the politics certainly cannot be. And we know from our own hard-lived personal experience, many of us knocked ourselves out to elect someone to political office, and no sooner than they got into political office, they started doing the bidding of the people who paid for their political ads and forgot to do the bidding of those of us who voted them to hold those seats. What we're simply saying is that it's the dollars that provide the basis of the power. And when we come together with our dollars in hand and put them in a collective pool and say we are going to open our own businesses with these dollars that we have brought, that is the beginning of genuine political power. It's economic and political. And without it, power only becomes surface. It becomes an illusion. And that's why we have been tossed from tossed to and fro in this country. We thought that the election of Barack Obama was going to do something great, and it didn't. And why? Because the people with the money ultimately control that office. But as members in a cooperative who own units, that's real power. Organized people and organized money speaks volumes in terms of self-determination and sovereignty. And this is the core of how we build this and take ourselves into the next century. So, A, it's the beginning of empowerment. And here's the most important point that I hope we'll take away from tonight's conversation, Sister Q.
Mm-hmm.
When we build a cooperative, what we are doing is we are building the means of production, and we are doing it as a group. In other words, the group owns this economic instrument. It's not privately owned. It's group owned. It's Black Africans who own this institution, and we're using it to do the things that we think are important for ourselves to do. This is the primary act of self-empowerment, to build this economic instrument that seizes the power from private corporations and puts it now in the hands of our group and enables us to do what we need to do with it. And that is the struggle that is taking place around the globe. Will the economy of the globe be privately owned by the Elon Musks and the Zuckerbergers and the Warren Buffetts and the Bill Gates? Or will the economy be owned and controlled by everyday people who live in these neighborhoods and in these communities? The only way that the planet is going to be able to pull back from the brink of climate collapse is when the people collectively in groups take control of the means of production. And that's what ULU is. It's a means of production. And so when we talk about the primary co-op and the secondary cooperatives, all of that together gives us control over our own means of production. Amilcar Cabral says that once we regain control of the means of production, that is liberation, and that returns us to the path of making history. Until we do that, we are just a footnote in someone else's history. And so what's really at stake, Sister Q, as we come together in this annual meeting, is we are exercising our sovereignty by making decisions on how we're going to spend the resources that we have access and control of. We're pooling it to maximize its power, and we're building businesses that we own and control together as a group. There's nothing more revolutionary for us to do than this work right here. And that's what's so critical and so exciting. And so we hope that our members will see this, will grasp this, and will flock to this meeting and help us to grow this cooperative. And so such that it is millions of us operating in this economic sphere in a way that we have not done since the building of the pyramids. Let me pause there, Sister Q. You may have something to say.
What I wanted to say is when you mentioned the word institution, and I think it's important for us to have that in our minds as well, because we're used to, you know, small mom and pop businesses and,
yep,
you know, the mother and father or whoever get to the place when they no longer want to run the business. They might pass it to the child who's really not interested in the business, and the business fails. So it doesn't have longevity. It doesn't go from generation to generation to generation. It's not like,
right,
say, Ford Motor Company that's been in existence 100 years or whatever.
Right.
That's what we expect from our co-op, that they'll go on into perpetuity as long as we are of the
long
frame
black
of mind.
Folks on the planet.
Yeah.
Right.
As long as the
right
frame of mind is essential, and we need to keep this going. And I think
Absolutely.
Being on the board is very, it's an honorable position to be in, I would say.
Absolutely. Sister Q, I've enjoyed talking to you tonight and with the family.
Excuse me. We've enjoyed the information you shared with us, Brother Unky, and we look forward to you coming again. Yeah, I think we'll have another time for you to talk about the upcoming seminar before, not seminar, the upcoming convention, before the convention, actually, so we can get some more news and find out who the keynote speaker is going to be and all that other stuff. So,
yes, ma'am.
We want to thank you
for
the information you shared tonight. And we want to thank everyone who joined us this evening. You can join us again next Thursday evening, 9 o'clock Eastern Time, for another installment of Dare to Win. Peace, Brother Auntie. Thank you.
Peace, Sister Q. Same to you. Thank you. Thank you, family.
Shining star for you to see what your life can truly be.